A report from the Middle East Africa Research Institute warns that South Africa's ties with Iran carries real-world consequences and is undermining South Africa's democratic values and strategic interests. Well, we have the director of the MERI, Benji Shulman, in the studio with us. Hi, Benji. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Linda. Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Can you summarize the key findings of this report?
Yeah, so I think broadly speaking, often when we talk about the relationship between Iran and South Africa, what you find is that people are very confused. They're not sure what to make of it. And really what this report tried to do is to look at what is this relationship? Why is it happening? And crucially, what are the costs that we're paying as a democratic country with our constitution working with an authoritarian regime that really doesn't share the values of our country, and what are the costs at a variety of levels of maintaining the relationship, and what are we getting out of it?
Well, that's the question. What are we getting out of it? So do you believe the ANC's foreign policy is being shaped by financial support from Iran for the ANC?
So I think that what the report does is it fills out that narrative a little bit more. Obviously, we looked at this issue of financial support and particularly gone into the MTN issue, which I think is actually key to this whole thing, much more so even than the International Court of Justice application. But it also goes back and looks into the past and sees the ideological framings that the ANC uses to drive its foreign policy that is different actually from the Constitution and South Africa's Bill of Rights, and how that connects with the Iranian ideological position, which I think helps buttress that viewpoint of the world that's not just related to the financial elements.
Well, do you think this relationship is continuing? Because I know under Naledi Pandor, it was quite active. So, and presently?
So what's interesting about the Iranian relationship is how far back it goes. You know, after the 1979 revolution, the Ayatollahs completely cut engagement with the apartheid regime. Or at least that's what they said. But in fact, what they were doing was under the table oil for weapons deals in big numbers, $750 million, which, you know, 40, 50 years ago, that was a lot of money. And at the same time, they were telling the ANC that they support them. They rhetorically were supporting them. They were giving them money. And so what you found was as it went into democracy, that relationship actually immediately flourished and has really never changed one way or another. It's always been growing. So whether a important actor like Naledi Pandor is in the picture or not, it actually sort of continues regardless, including at the moment. So we saw, for example, after the war between Israel and Iran, that the embassy here opened up a condolence book, and we had senior ANC and DIRCO members coming to sign condolences. I'm not sure condolence for what exactly, but clearly that this was designed as a sort of propaganda move to show that the South Africans were still engaged, and that was clearly on the table even after what had just happened.
Well, there seems to be more and more pressure on South Africa because of this relationship. So, you know, why would they continue it? Because there's the issue of Mzebisi Jonas, that he doesn't seem to have access to the United States. So what is in it for South Africa, do you think?
So, I mean, the Jonas issue is a great case in point, right? People thought that the reason that Trump doesn't like him or the administration doesn't like him is because some comments that he made, which I'm sure didn't help. But it's clear that the key issue is MTN in this particular case. Jonas is the chairman of MTN, and they are very, very wrapped up in the Iran cellular market, and there are quite credible allegations that have now been brought to court in America, being brought to court in South Africa. We're going to see a finding from the Constitutional Court about whether that can go ahead, I think, pretty soon. And I think that's part of the relationship is big South African business that has big money over there connected with the ANC's ideological positioning that it sees as a sort of anti-imperialist group and connected to this other regime, which it feels close to, as well as then these financial inducements via the corporates, via support that the ANC has gotten and likely is still getting. And that really, I think, cements the ANC's position here with regards to Iran. As we've seen with the ANC, it doesn't like to let go of ideological commitments, whether that's domestically, but certainly internationally. And so I think that this makes it a bone that this dog does not want to let go of.
So is your pressure on South Africa, you know, with regard to its relationship with Iran, any way related to Israel's case at the, or the case against Israel at the ICJ?
So I think that the pressure is part of it. I think that the ICJ represents the sort of tip of the pyramid. You know, we have a lot of stuff underneath that shows the relationship between South Africa and Iran, the military exercises, the economic ties, the shielding of the of Iran's nuclear program, for example, at the IAEA, even our gray listing that we are trying to get off of at the moment. Part of the reason why we're gray listed with the report shows is some of the concerns were Iranian money that was coming into the country along with North Korea. So what we're seeing is that the international institutions, even before the ICJ, were starting to look at this relationship and say, we don't really like it. And then obviously there's this this question about what role did it play in the ICJ case, right? Was it just rhetorical? Was it via its proxy? So we saw, for example, Naledi Pandor phoning Hamas after October 7th. Hamas alleges that this was because to offer support. Naledi Pandor says it was humanitarian aid. But regardless, it actually doesn't make a difference because officially up to that point, that was just an ANC Hamas relationship. And so now this is now a state-based thing. So the real question is, she has that phone call. She goes to Tehran on a sort of unscheduled flight. And everyone understands then that the ANC's monetary problems disappear after that. So I think everyone always wants to know, well, where's the smoking gun? And I'm going to be honest, we're not there yet. I think it will come out at some point. But it may very well be that if this MTN case goes ahead, that we may see that this is not just this is not one smoking gun, that actually we have a whole armory that we have to look at. And it's not just a one-off case, and that this case was already sort of in the works, not so much in anticipation of October 7th, but as part of a broader geostrategic play by South Africa and groups like Iran and other countries to put pressure on Israel and the United States.
And what is the links between MTN and President Cyril Ramaphosa?
So that's, I think, one of the big things that is part of this case is that he was the chairman of MTN at the time when they got the cellular license in Iran. Now, what's been alleged by Turkcell, who was the competitor at the time, was that that had been corruptly done, that there had been payments. The nuclear diplomacy that we saw from South Africa, the allegation was that it was a result of it. And there's actually been people that have been jailed, what the report shows, in the United States for collusion, even though, you know, we haven't had the actual case itself, but there's been people who were charged and brought to justice already on this thing. So I think if that starts to come out, that's going to be a serious problem for the administration of Cyril Ramaphosa, because he really was in the center of it when this happened.
Well, this is all about South Africa's foreign policy, which the opposition parties don't seem to have a lot of say in. So what would you like to happen? Would you like to see a shift in South Africa's foreign policy away from Iran?
The question we've got to ask ourselves is, what are we getting out of this? I mean, the trade that we have with Iran is, it's one of the countries in the Middle East. I think some of the stats that I've seen show that even our trade with Israel, who we don't really sort of seem to get on with at the foreign policy level, is more than the Iranians. So the trade amount is not huge. There's, you know, there's oil, obviously, which is always important in an economy like ours, but that can be replaced other ways. So the question is, are we putting at risk trade with the United States, for example, because quite clearly some of these executive orders and some of the stuff that's going to Congress at the moment is citing Iran as a bad actor that they're concerned about. So before we've been accused of putting at risk our relationship with the Americans for the Russians or for the Chinese, right, which are quite much larger economies, but for Iran, it's really a small actor. So besides for trade, we have no constitutional engagement. We've got no values-based connections to that society. You know, this is a country where cultural groups can't go to universities if they're the wrong religion or the wrong culture. We've got the rights of women that are under threat there. There's freedom of speech, freedom of association, political freedom. All of these stuff that we take for granted in South Africa is in our constitution and is not present in Iran. So from a values perspective and from a strategic interest perspective, it simply doesn't make sense that this relationship continues, certainly in the way that it has.
What is Iran getting out of the relationship?
So for Iran, this is quite important, right? Because there, Iran really doesn't have very many friends. It's not well liked in the Middle East at all, whether you're Israeli or Arab. It's got a sort of a relationship with North Korea, and it sells drones to Russia for its war with Ukraine, but and it sells oil to China. So it's, let's call it, legitimacy WhatsApp group is very small. And by being in relationship with South Africa, what you have is a nice, shiny, democratic, open society that's suddenly prepared to bring you into BRICS, for example. South Africa was very important in bringing the Iranians in. This Hague group that we're seeing at the moment, which is trying to get together to try and boycott Israel. South Africa and Colombia did that, but Iran pitches up. So South Africa is a kind of entry drug, if you like, into the world system that otherwise it really wouldn't have any other partners. So for them, we're a kind of crucial point in the global south, but also into the rest of the international system in general.
So are you expecting more pressure from the US on South Africa because of its links to Iran?
Look, I think that what we saw at the White House a few months ago with Trump and Ramaphosa is not the end of the story, right? Since then, we've seen other groups that have been going, applying pressure. And I think that the Americans are not satisfied yet with what is going on in terms of our foreign policy. It's a mistake, I think, to believe that this is a trade relationship only now with the United States. And don't forget, we are actually, for the first time, we've seen serious, open, kinetic action by the United States against the Iranians with these B-2 bombs that took out Fordo and whatever. So if they weren't at a state of war before, which they are, we're really seeing essentially a hot war now between the two groups or states. And South Africa is still very aligned. So we need to figure that out, because I think the United States went from, oh, Iran's a threat, to, oh, Iran is a big threat. And South Africa is still sticking around.
So what would you say to critics who say you're raising these issues now because of the pressure on Israel because of Gaza?
Look, the Iranian issue is not unrelated to related to that. Because of the ICJ and because of Iran's connection to Hezbollah and Hamas and the Assad regime, and you know, people can say that that's about Gaza, but the truth is that these were groups that have been coming openly to South Africa, talking at UCT, for example, for years now. So this is not an October 7th issue. This is something that predates that by at least 10 years, maybe more, since we've been seeing these groups. And, you know, these are proxy groups that are funded by Iran, supported by Iran, and it sometimes take orders from Iran. So it's part of, it's sort of, you know, South Africa is lying with a dog here, and now we're getting the fleas. And so taking the dog to the vet to get the fleas removed is hardly something that someone can complain about.
So can you give us a bit of an explanation of the presence of Hamas in South Africa?
So Hamas's presence, if you look at it, and again, it's covered in the report and people can have a look at it, they had been trying for a number of years to get in to South Africa. They met with people like Ronny Casserolls and a number of others in the Middle East at different periods when he was the Minister of Intelligence. But they formally came to South Africa in 2015. There was a visit. They met with Zuma. And officially, they said that they were just meeting the ANC. But they actually signed an MOU between Hamas and the ANC. And subsequently, there's been more visits of Hamas to the country, including the representative of Hamas to Tehran. Or to Iran, basically. So the person who's driving the relationship between Hamas and the ANC is also the person who was their representative to Iran, which I think tells you a lot about what that relationship actually looks like and where the connections are.
Benji Shulman, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Linda, I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much.